On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Brian G, Mr. Curtis Franklin here today. Now, we've talked about digital identities for a long time, but what about a digital version of your driver's license? Well, Apple has a solution, and some states are actually adopting it. We'll discuss what that means. Plus, remote work and teams have grown during the pandemic, and that needs communication platforms to continue to grow as well. And that's where Dialpad is at the center of it. That's right. Today, we have Brian Peterson, CTO of Dialpad, to talk AI-powered calling, conferencing, and contact centers. Definitely shouldn't miss it. Twiet on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twiet.
This is Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 460, recorded September 10th, 2021. The voice of the internet. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by FlexTrack, the powerful yet simple security management platform that helps you get the real cybersecurity work done. With FlexTrack, you'll streamline your assessments, analytics, and reporting. Visit FlexTrack.com/twit and claim your free month. And by CrowdStrike. CrowdStrike harnesses the power of every click, every action, and every ally to grow stronger and stop cyber threats before they can stop you. Join the fight and experience the power of Falcon Platform for free today at CrowdStrike.com/twit. And by Akamai. Akamai is the world's largest distributed edge compute platform to deliver and protect your digital experiences worldwide. Tap into Akamai for its unrivaled intelligence, performance, and scalability. Visit Akamai.com/enterprise today to learn more. Welcome to Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through this big world of the enterprise, but I definitely can't guide you on myself. I need to bring in the professionals, the experts in their field, starting with their very own network and security expert and all-around tech geek, Mr. Brian Chi, net architect at Sky Fiber. Chibert, how are you, my friend? It seems your connection's better today. Have you won the high-speed lottery?
Yes, I did. You know, I saw an AT&T guy up on the pole right behind my house, and I started yelling at him, go, copper or fiber? And he goes, fiber, of course. And apparently, it's not quite AT&T U-verse. This is apparently their newest one that doesn't even quite have a name with marketing yet. The SFP Plus that went into the modem is actually 5 gig capable. So that's very cool. And amazingly enough, the AT&T sales guy that came to check on everything was amazing. He actually talked me into dropping my T-Mobile on all my phones and tablets and is saving me a ton of money on my mobiles and got my wife a brand new iPhone as part of the deal. So I'm pretty stoked.
See, that's how they get you. Well, at least they will have a better name than U-verse. We'll hope so, right? Well, speaking of busy and also people who have really good names, we offer our enterprise and security expert. He's a senior analyst at Omdia, and he's also Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, it's always great to see you, my friend. What's keeping you busy this week?
Lou, it is great to be here. I'm doing lots of research, getting ready for another trip, going out to Las Vegas for IWCE, a conference that's all about communication for critical infrastructure and public service, you know, all the things that the first responders use to talk to one another. I have some good panels I'm going to be on. I'm going to be on three separate panels out there, including one where we talk about, well, among other things, whether it's possible to fix the problems with our public service and critical infrastructure communications without resorting to rip and replace. That should be a good one, and I'm looking forward to sharing that with everyone after the conference.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it. Well, speaking of interesting stuff, we do have quite the week in the enterprise, so we definitely should get started. Now, digital identities have been the talk for a pretty long time. What about a digital version of your license? Well, Apple has a solution, and some states are actually adopting it. We'll discuss what that means. Plus, remote work and remote teams have been on the growth trend during the pandemic, and they need communication platforms to continue to grow. And guess what? Dialpad is at the center of that. Today we have Brian Peterson. He's the CTO of Dialpad to talk about AI-powered calling, conferencing, and contact centers. So sit tight. We have a lot to talk about there. But first, like we always do, we should go ahead and jump into this week's news blips. Now, we continue to play the zero-sum game against malware and ransomware, but what if we could defend ourselves at the hardware level? Well, an international team of researchers has developed this SSD security solution that acts at the controller firmware level, meaning the feature is baked right into the storage device to detect out-of-the-ordinary activity that signals a ransomware infection and attempts to encrypt your data. Now, according to the researchers, the method degrades performance slightly, to the tune of about 17% latency performance decrease and a maximum of 8% lower. Well, the solution is said to be easily integrated into SSD manufacturing chains, and it aims to become an integral barrier on commercial SSD solutions to the ransomware problem, made all the more graver due to most users not deploying ransomware-focused security solutions. Now, the research differs from the SS-bound security solutions in that it's completely hardware-based and can actually be repaired the damage by the ransomware attacks. Now, the firmware solution, tentatively named SSD Insider Plus, takes advantage of the inherent writing and deletion mechanisms in NAND flash. So the firmware has been shown to detect and stop ransomware incursions with a 100% efficiency. That's pretty good. And it can revert any encryption that's actually achieved within 10 seconds of the process start. Pretty impressive, if you ask me. Now, that may actually create a new type of market. Malware protection devices baked right into your storage. And who knows? Businesses might be willing to pay top dollar to ensure that they future-proof and protect their data from day zero.
Hey, do you hate hackers? Well, if so, you might have to reconsider that, because they're finding most of the cloud misconfiguration problems before they're exploited. If you're in enterprise IT, cloud misconfigurations are the bane of your existence. Cloud misconfiguration problems have plagued security teams for years, with reports of data exposure regularly making headlines. Rapid7 researchers identified 121 publicly reported cases of data exposure in 2020 that were directly caused by a misconfiguration in the affected business's cloud environment. Now, most of these instances, 62%, were found and reported by independent researchers and not criminals. But according to a new report, the 2021 Cloud Misconfigurations Report, it warned that there are likely more cases still undiscovered. On average, researchers reported 10 disclosed incidents per month across 15 industries. Most of these were found, disclosed, and remediated within the same month because they were discovered by people seeking out poorly secured services. Now, nearly half didn't specify the service. However, misconfigured permissions on Amazon Web Services buckets and internet facing Elasticsearch servers made up 25% and 21% of reported data exposures, respectively. Now, of the industries affected by data exposure, the most represented are information professional, healthcare, and entertainment. A range of 14 information types were reported as exposed. The most notable were data sets involving credentials, personal financial information, and personal health information. To avoid a cloud misconfiguration incident, researchers say, organizations should avoid the set-and-forget-it mentality and adopt the habit of checking and rechecking security policies for potential gaps. And remember, while independent researchers are helping many businesses avoid potentially massive security breaches, it shouldn't fall on the independents to discover misconfigurations for everyone.
Well, Ant's going to appreciate this. I'm kind of continuing on my micro rant, I guess, on how expensive Adobe Creative Cloud is and why I can't afford it now that I'm on fixed income. Anyway, so Microsoft really hasn't updated the old Windows Movie Maker software since 2012, and hasn't even offered the old version for download since 2017, leaving Windows users to fend for themselves when it comes to beginner-friendly editing and sharing of video clips. Well, that situation will hopefully change thanks to Microsoft's acquisition of Clipchamp, a web-based video editing tool. ClipChamp includes a variety of built-in templates for family video editors, Twitch and YouTube streamers, and businesses putting together ads or other branded videos. Well, our friends at Microsoft haven't made a specific announcement yet about where ClipChamp will be integrated into its product line, but there is a hint that the app is a natural fit to extend the cloud-powered productivity experiences in Microsoft 365, quote, implying that the web version will be part of Microsoft's subscription service in the future. ClipChamp is also a great fit for Microsoft Windows, which currently only offers very basic video editing via the built-in photo apps. Microsoft's current tools definitely aren't up to the level of iMovie, which Apple offers for free to macOS, iOS, and iPadOS users. Darn it! I really should have taken up ClipChamp on my editorial review trial sooner. I just found some nice Photoshop and Illustrator replacements thanks to Ant Pruitt of Hands-On Photography, but having something to replace Premiere would be awesome. Adobe, here's my rant in your direction. Subscriptions are nice for folks that make your living with your software, but it makes it hard for those of us that might only use your systems once or twice a month.
Now, we have covered a lot of different nefarious botnets in the past, and it's the fear of new infectious ones that keep IT people up at night. Well, unfortunately, a new distributed denial of service botnet that kept growing over the summer has been hammering Russian internet giant Yandex for the past month. Now, the attack peaking at the unprecedented rate of 21.8 million requests per second, the botnet received the name Miris, and it gets its power from tens of thousands of compromised devices that researchers believe to be primarily powerful network equipment. Now, news about the massive DDoS attack hitting the Yandex broke this week in the Russian media, which described it as being the largest in the history of the Russian internet, the so-called RUNet. Now, details have emerged in joint research from Yandex and its partner in providing DDoS protection services, Greater Labs. Now, information collected separately from the several attacks deployed by the new Miris botnet showed a striking force of more than 30,000 devices. Now, from the data that Yandex observed, assaults on its servers relied on about 56,000 attacking hosts. However, the researchers have seen indications that the number of compromised devices may actually be closer to 250,000. Now, the researchers note that the compromised hosts in Miris are not your typical IoT blinker connected to Wi-Fi, but actually highly capable devices that require an Ethernet connection. Miris is the same botnet responsible for generating the largest volume of attack traffic that Cloudflare recorded and mitigated to date, as it peaked at 17.2 million requests per second. However, Miris's botnet broke the record with the Yandex, as its flux researched a force of 21.8 million requests. Now, there are strides to combat the botnet by fingerprinting devices, IPs, that are performing that nefarious activity. However, it's challenging to keep up with the scale of the botnet as it grows. Now, as for the compromised devices used, the researchers say that they are related to Microtik, the Leviathan maker of network equipment for businesses of all sizes. Now, that stems back from the reoccurring theme that we always talk about here on the show, is that you need to make sure your devices are up to date, ensure that you're keeping those devices up to date so you can get rid of these issues. Also, monitor your traffic. Ensure that you're alerted and remediate out any out-of-the-ordinary traffic. Plus, another way you can combat is ensure your policies for scale or on your services are set to handle that extra temporary load. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the News Bites. But before we get to the bites, we do have to thank a really great sponsor of this week, Enterprise Tech, and that's PlexTrack, the security management platform that brings you better reports, deeper assessments, and more insights. Now, do you spend hours reporting security issues and feel like it's getting you nowhere? Well, what about feeling buried in data but still can't get a full picture of your security posture to prioritize remediation efforts? Well, we've got the solution for you. PlexTrack empowers continuous assessment, automated workflow, and effective collaboration between teams to help cybersecurity professionals do more in less time. You can create assessment reports in half the time and centralize your remediation efforts across all scans, assessments, and audits through powerful risk visualizations, scanner and ticketing integrations, and enhanced analytics to effectively communicate risks in real time. Now, whether red or blue, there is a PlexTrack for every security professional to save time and get the right work done. Now, listen, red teams can do a lot of things here. They can import findings from numerous vulnerability scanners. They include screenshots and videos with auto formatting. They can create customized templates, export to Word with one click, and they can also streamline the report writing process to deliver better reports faster. Now, blue teams can do a lot here as well. They can customize internal and external assessment questionnaires, synchronize findings with task management tools like Jira Cloud, and they can assign findings to team members and track status over time. And they can provide attestation of security posture with robust analytics. On April 12th, Plextrack announced they have closed a $10 million round to fuel growth of their cybersecurity workflow platform. Venture firms Nora Mosley Partners and Madrona Venture Group led the round that with participation from Stage.O Ventures. Plextrack will use the funds to continue building the team and growing the platform. Plextrack improves the entire security engagement lifecycle, making it easy to generate security reports, deliver them securely, and track the issues to completion straight from the platform. Book your demo today. Now try Plextrack free for 1 month and see how it can change your life as a security professional. Simply go to plextrack.com/twit and claim your free month. That's plextrack.com/twit. And we thank Plextrack for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's time for the bites. Now, this week we heard some interesting details. Apple is rolling out the ability to add driver's licenses and state IDs to the Walla app on the iPhone and Apple Watch in select U.S. states. Now, this is interesting because the first states to introduce this functionality will actually be Arizona, Georgia, but Connecticut, Iowa, Kentucky, Maryland, Oklahoma, and Utah will follow thereafter. Now, neither the states nor Apple have said exactly when the rollouts will begin, other than giving a general fall 2021 target. Now, the Wallet is an app, obviously, maybe you've used it before. It comes with pre-installed iPhones and Apple Watch wearables. Now, the app stores credit cards, boarding passes, student IDs, and other items you might normally put in your physical wallet. Now, the new driver's license or state ID feature focuses on a specific use case. That's right, airports. Now, the post highlights quotes from the TSA agency supporting the move and commitment from TSA to accept digital IDs at airports and participating states. Now, after the announcement, Apple stated users will only be able to associate one fingerprint with the IDs on Touch ID devices to ensure that IDs can be used only by the actual ID holder. Now, digital identities is an important topic here. It takes us back to the question, how secure is your device in that secure enclave on the hardware? Is it jailbreak proof? Good question. I want to throw this to my co-host because we've talked about digital identities before. I'm going to throw this to you first, Curtis. Like, obviously, from an application perspective, even from an enterprise perspective, this is a challenging thing because obviously, enterprise has digital identities today. They have smart cards. They have other things that they use that are very specific for a user's identity when they access company resources and other things. How would this be different from using a consumer phone for this type of thing?
Well, I think the big change is going to be the implied security and privacy. Consumer devices, especially Apple, they take great pride in their device security, in their ecosystem security, and in the privacy of those things. The question is whether it is sufficient to protect a document with the repercussions that a driver's license can have. It's one thing if you have a credit card number stolen. The credit card agreements tend to protect the consumer. There's a financial issue, but that can be it. We've seen in many criminal and even terror cases that the repercussions of a stolen government ID can be huge. And so I think that the place that it's truly going to be different is in that level of security. That's why I think I find it fascinating and maybe a little encouraging that Apple is able to do this, especially since I know that some of the states they're looking at, their driver's licenses fall under the Real ID criteria. And that's another level entirely. So this is, I think, a good step in the right direction.
I agree. No, Jupiter, I want to throw this to you because obviously, you know, you've worked a lot in industry and you've seen different types of secure devices and digital identifications. You know, it sounds like Apple's trying to get back into the game when it comes to, you know, enterprise use of their devices. Is this going to get them there, or is there any other things they need to do?
Well, I'm reasonably sure. Obviously, I haven't been able to see behind the curtain, but I am reasonably sure Apple is following along off a military project called the CAC card. I can't remember what CAC stands for, but the military ID is a smart card, and it allows people to carry their records with them from base to base. Now, one of the things that comes along the line is being scrolled on the screen, the Apple Cash gadget. So this is kind of where I think Apple is going. They want to be able to carry not only credit card, ID information, things like that, but in the case of the Apple Cash gadget, they want to be able to also carry cryptocurrency. So if we go back into science fiction, you know, whether it's Asimov or whoever, there are always this little thing where they start talking about a credit chip, you know, being able to have it. In fact, I got these really cool printed devices from a friend of mine on the Star Trek set. And it was the Federation credit chip, which is very cool. Anyway, there's a lot of things that people want to do. This has been a holy grail because the reality is checks, U.S. credit cards, even European credit cards are horribly insecure. You know, even chip and PIN isn't that great. You know, when Curtis and I talked to a couple of people at a trade show quite a while ago, the finance guys are saying, yeah, chip and PIN's not perfect. There's still ways of messing with it. So maybe this, I hope, will become the next step to something more secure because cryptography is finally a lot more robust, shall we say. And being able to carry around a little doodad like that cash gadget means you carry less, you know, that's a nice thin thing, you know. It might be along the lines of what we saw at some Miami clubs. They were actually using subcutaneous chips, like the ones you see in dogs and cats. They're using it to hold some basic ID, well, basically just a serial number. But it was registered with the club, and associated with that serial number was the person's identity. You know, I'm old enough to drink. And it also had how are you going to pay it. And amazingly enough, young women were actually having this inserted under their breasts. So as they're going into the club, you see the club guys actually scanning themselves. It's like, that's not going to go very far. But, you know, there's a lot of interesting baby steps along our way. And maybe someday, very soon, IDs and financial information might be something that you can stick into a pencil pocket in your shirt or your pants. I'm looking forward to it. I'm not sure about you guys.
I definitely tell you, like TPM, obviously one of these TPM, especially TPM version 2, is a very secure hardware way of securing data, like, for instance, passcodes, encryption keys, tokens of some kind. And so this seems to be a consumer version of that. A lot of companies, like, for instance, you see a lot of these companies out there allowing you to plug cards into the phone to produce a similar effect. And so Apple's saying, you know what, like, we're going to start with digital identities as being the real identities. We're going to work from the consumer facing side of things and work our way backwards. And I think this might be a way to get the hearts and minds of the industry and trust the devices a little bit more. They've been really successful with Touch ID. In fact, I haven't been able to find a jailbreak that actually allows you to actually access Touch ID data on the phone without ruining the data. So this is an interesting move forward to say, you know what, like, we'll allow users to start putting their real driver's licenses that they use to actually do things like fly and other things, potentially even take money out, bank transfers, that kind of thing on their phone. And then once they do that, once that's successful, we'll apply other applications like you were showing, the money card and so on. Chibert, I want to throw this to you because I have a feeling this seems like a Pandora's box, because like I said, Apple's going from in reverse here. They're starting with a consumer, you know, potentially consumer based thing where all people need an ID to be able to get on a plane, and they're working backwards, but it's all dependent on whether the technology is there or not. Right.
Yeah. We're never going to get it if we wait for the federal government to do an electronic ID. It's not going to happen. Look at how often different countries have actually tried it. You know, being able to have an electronic ID for things like voting and so forth. It has been tried in some relatively small countries where the number of citizens was small enough that it wasn't going to drive everybody crazy trying this out. They work, kind of. Now, as far as I know, the largest rollout on Earth of electronic IDs is actually the U.S. military. Now, keep in mind, the U.S. military is the largest organization in the U.S. federal government, bar none. And the CAC card has been available for close to 20 years now, I think, 15, 20 years. It was actually good enough that when I was doing contracting work for power quality monitoring at a U.S. naval base in Hawaii, I was actually issued a civilian CAC card, which was kind of interesting. And they didn't just look at it. They actually stuck it into the device, and it would bring up from a database my information. So that even if I had a fake CAC card, so say someone go and pasted up their own picture over my card, it would validate it against the back-end database, which was very cool. And it was all in, you know, very well encrypted. So I think Apple was taking a page from the U.S. military. And I think I would imagine this is me guessing now, I don't know for a fact, that Apple probably stole a whole bunch of the engineer types and programmer types from the original CAC card program. Because that is a whale of a bunch of experience, and maybe Apple will do it right and roll it out to an even larger population than the U.S. military.
Curtis, I want to throw this back to you for a last word here. Like we talked about this in the beginning around enterprise applications of this, right? I think the idea here is a lot of organizations, they use smart cards for that tap and go type identity. And, you know, now we're saying, okay, the phones can do this. Do you think that the smart card companies of the world, do you think they're shaking in their boots here? You think this is something that could be used for a similar application?
You know, I don't think they're shaking in their boots, because I think most of them have already put plans in place to move their technologies to mobile devices like iPhones. And where they will really play heavily is when the technology starts shifting to Android phones. Apple is a closed ecosystem. Android phones are anything but. And when people start to do this sort of thing on Android phones, then the private players will come in. You know, I think a lot of this is something that governments and businesses are really looking forward to, because as we know, so many of the vulnerabilities exist where information is passed from one device, from one medium to another. By going to a phone, the Apple Wallet in this case, what is passed is typically a one-time use token, a unique one-time use token, so that even if it's intercepted, even if it's captured, it's useless. And that's what everyone is looking forward to, something that can't be usefully intercepted midstream, something that will make fraud identity theft much more difficult than it is now.
Well, folks, that does it for the Bytes. Next up, we have our guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot. But before we do have to thank another great sponsor of this week in enterprise tech, and that's CrowdStrike. Now, you've seen the headlines, and we talk about it all the time here on Twitter. Ransomware attack after ransomware attack holding businesses hostage. It can feel like it's only a matter of time before they come for you, and you'll have to decide, do you pay or do you lose everything? But you have a third option. That's right. Do you defeat your adversaries before the fight even starts? With CrowdStrike, you're not alone in the battle against ransomware. Secure future demands a shared defense, and that's why CrowdStrike's Falcon platform uses their threat graph powered by advanced AI to analyze behavior on your devices, servers, and cloud workloads to find the threats and stop them. And we talked to CTO Michael Sentonas and asked him, can you explain more about how CrowdStrike's threat graph helps to find threats?
All the data points, the signals that we get come from the endpoints and the workloads that we have around the world. So we have an incredibly distributed network of customers from all around the world. And Threat Graph enables our platform to correlate those approximately 7 trillion endpoint-related events per week in real time.
Their security platform delivers the industry's most powerful set of tools to fight today's most sophisticated cyber attacks, all delivered via the cloud through a lightweight, intelligent agent. Now, Forrester study finds Falcon Complete delivers, in fact, 403% return on investment with 100% confidence. CrowdStrike harnesses the power of every click, every action, and every ally to grow stronger and stop cyber threats before they can stop you. Now, Falcon Complete stops breaches every hour of every day through expert management, threat hunting, monitoring, and remediation. And it's backed by CrowdStrike's breach prevention warranty. Now, they don't just say it, they guarantee it for Falcon Complete managed customers who receive a warranty covering up to $1 million in the event of a breach. Terms and conditions apply. The Gartner Magic Quadrant named CrowdStrike a leader for endpoint protection platform for 2021. Join the fight and experience the power of Falcon platform for free today at CrowdStrike.com/twit. That's CrowdStrike.com/twit. CrowdStrike, because what we've built together is worth defending together. And we thank CrowdStrike for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot. And today we have Brian Peterson. He is the CTO of Dialpad. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. Now, our audience loves to hear people's origin stories. Can you maybe take us through a short journey through tech and what brought you to Dialpad?
Yeah. So I started at Google back in 2002. I was there for about 6 years, and then we had we acquired a company called Brand Central, which did similar things that we do now at Dialpad. I got to know them. They brought me over as sort of like one of the first, you know, engineers from Google who could like transfer their platform to Google's platform. So I got to meet the team. I got to see their technology, learn about a lot about like communications and telephony. And then from that, I met Craig Walker, my other co-founder, and we worked on Google Voice together. We shipped Google Voice to 10 million plus users, learned a lot about telephony that I didn't know before. And then we started Dialpad. When we first started, one interesting thing is we weren't directly in communications immediately. We were actually doing restaurant software for part of it, which a lot of people don't know about. I think some people asked us, like, why are you doing restaurant software? You don't know anything about restaurants. I was like, yeah, but we didn't know anything about telephony when we started either, but it worked out okay for us. So we actually built something like a waitlist system, which was that would text you and call you when your table's ready. And it was, you know, to replace those like buzzers that everyone loses and break.
Right.
It was on an iPad at the time. The iPad was like the big thing. And we actually used that platform to build out what is our current meetings product, which is at the time Uber Conference, and sort of got ready for like this giant platform that we wanted to build for like communications for around the world. Coming from obviously Google Voice, we knew this like had a lot of, you know, application to the business level. So we kind of like started doing that with even just like waitlist stuff and then audio conferencing. And, you know, some people knew us from Uber Conference, where it had the funny hold music that tells you you're on, like, sings about being on hold. And we actually won TechCrunch Disrupt back in 2012 with that. And that sort of like pivoted us like instantly back to communications and to what Dialpad is today, which is, kind of communications for like every business, for internal and external. So
yeah, DialPal's fantastic. Now I want to, before we get into some of the latest and greatest developments in the communication platform, DialPad's, you know, obviously fairly new to the game compared to some of the other platforms out there. Can you maybe take us through what it brings to the table? What kind of sets it apart?
Yeah. So for us, like, telephony is pretty old. So like phone numbers are, you know, phone systems are pretty old. Unified communications has actually been, you know, people have been saying unified communications for 20 plus years, I think now, before we really actually had it. So what, one of the things that sets us apart is that, one, we've actually been iterating on this for about 15, 20 years now, through Grand Central, through Google Voice, and now with DialPad. When we built it, this was already after the smartphone came out. So you already had, you know, Android, you had iPhone, you had high connectivity, you had the cloud system. So you had AWS, you had Google Cloud, Microsoft Azure. And like, we were poised to build this because we already saw the future because we were living it. We're like, what if you had to like completely rethink the phone system, completely rethink like real-time communications? How would that look? And it's like, well, that would look like every other modern cloud SaaS product, and, you know, microservices product is. So we were able to basically design from scratch for like this modern web world versus the, I'm only going to use a desk phone hardwired into a closet server. So that made a huge difference to make it so that you could do so much with our thing. So like everything we are using in DialPad is built off of this same underlying platform. Like our video conferencing is doing the same thing. Our call center calls are running. Our AI is connected the exact same way for like voice intelligence through your, again, your video meetings, your text messaging, because we support, you know, SMS and all forms of text messaging. And so that was sort of the huge difference, was like, we were able to build this like real-time system for like the work from anywhere world that we're kind of in now, and we kind of already saw coming.
Right. Now, you kind of alluded to this in what you were saying. So some of the technology behind there, the cloud side, you said that it was microservice driven. Is that how some of the back end of DialPad works, is the fact that it's microservice, it can scale pretty easily, it has that low latency and performance because of that?
Yeah. So we did. So there's some unique things, because this isn't, when you're dealing with like real time, you know, like the difference between like pressing a button on a website and it's submitting something, and then maybe behind the scenes it's trying a few times, but you don't notice it, but it still succeeds, right? The customer might not notice that. But like when you're dealing with real-time communication, you ring someone, it's going to, in our case, ring some people's potentially, you know, up to 8 devices across the world. It has to work, right? It has to be fast. You can't miss that call, right? Like you can kind of miss, you know, an HTTP request. So when we built it, the other thing that's a problem too, is like that you don't see again in a lot of, I mean, you can hide some of the other stuff, is latency matters, right? Like with calls, like if we're on a even 200 millisecond delay, it's going to get awkward, right? We're going to be talking over each other. So what we did is, and the internet wasn't, even the cloud stuff, because it's kind of shared, a lot of the cloud is kind of shared, isn't built for like VoIP traffic. So like what we did is we actually designed it so that everything that should be in the cloud, like modern web, microservices, you know, REST APIs, all that HTTP stuff is in the cloud, using all the modern cloud infrastructure as a service, platform as a service. But then the actual thing that's hosting your audio, your video, that's the key part. Like once you're on that, it has to be low latency. It has to be reliable. You're calling someone across the world. You want them to be like as little hops as possible, right? So with a cloud, you can't always guarantee that. So what we did is we actually built we call them kind of dumb, you know, bare metal machines. So we have data centers for these in, you know, 11 countries, 6 continents, where we put them really close to our carriers. We put them really close to our customers. We sometimes do direct lines to our carriers. So that way, when you have that phone call and you have that high quality and it works, and the video call that just works, it's because there's less middlemen involved. There's less, you know, we're not sharing resources at that point. We have dedicated lines, but you don't want to make those too complicated, because then it's hard to manage. You can't innovate. So what we did is we said, let's just keep all the business logic in the cloud, keep the media just pointing to and relaying to those different, you know, data centers.
Got it. So separation of concerns, the challenge there is things like failover and load balancing. Now, how do you handle something like that? Obviously, communication is important. You want to make sure that it's consistent and reliable. How do you handle something like that if you have direct connections and other things in the cloud?
Lots of monitoring, as you'd expect, right? lots of monitoring to know what goes wrong. We have retry mechanisms. If the call is going wrong, we can switch it to other machines. We detect that. If a call tries to attempt really quickly and it quickly fails, we have ways to route to different machines, right? We have ways to route to, you know, one of those other data centers, another machine in those data centers. Our clouds have a lot of, you know, they're multi-zone to also have all that failover. And we're leveraging a lot of like the modern technology on the cloud to do that. And we actually, we're so confident in it that we actually offer 100% SLA too. Wow. So, you know, not a lot of people are doing that, but basically we're so confident in this because a lot of people are a little worried sometimes about the cloud, but we're now in over 7,000 businesses. We are using, you know, our mix of customers is kind of a mix of everything, small, like 1-2 person to medium to large, you know, 10,000, you know, plus customers and with 20 offices around the world. So at this point, like we've seen it all too, like we have been around and we've seen it all in our previous. So we're just taking a lot of that stuff we learned from Google too and just repurposing it on this.
Makes sense. Now you talked about this in the beginning. You said, hey, we also feed data into our AI platform. So that sounds interesting because what could they possibly be doing with AI when it comes to a communication platform? We're interested to hear.
Yeah. So one thing we did was we acquired this company called TalkIQ a few years ago. And their specialty was in what we call voice intelligence. So every single call, and this is all optional, but by default it's on for you, for the customer. Every single thing in real time is sent through our AI engine. So our voice intelligence engine, it is doing it all in real time, which is also something that is not necessarily normal and is very difficult to do. And the other thing too about it is that we built, this is all proprietary. We built the entire AI system ourselves. A lot of people are using, you know, obviously as expected and makes sense using, you know, AWS for their transcription or, you know, something else for their, you know, NLP. And that's fine, but there's a couple problems with that. One, it's expensive. Like they charge several cents a minute to just even, you know, someone like us, which then of course that cost has to go back to the user. And you can imagine with phone calls having to charge a few extra cents a minute, that's not going to be great just, you know, for the AI piece. Doing it ourselves lets us actually, again, cut out that middleman. But then the other thing that's nice about it is it lets us customize it. So the AI you get from a call center for a support team, for a sales call, is very different than the voice transcription even and the NLP you'd get from like talking to your device, your Echo device. Like those models are different. Like the codecs are even different. Like that's, you know, sometimes we're over phone lines to do this analysis. That's a completely different like low band codec. So your models for transcription are totally different. And the way you customize things, like we customize even down to the customer so that when someone says a certain term that's just, you know, just for their vertical, we catch it, right? We write it down correctly in the transcription. It's now searchable. And then what we do with all of this is the benefit of having this again in real time, which is very unique. It's connected all into that platform. What it lets us do is things like when someone calls into your call center and they have a question of like, hey, I don't know what's wrong with this. We automatically can detect what question they ask and we can pop up to the agent who might just have started 2 weeks ago, right? We could pop up to the agent. Hey, here's their answer. Like, this is what you should tell them. And it's going to be right because it detected exactly the question. That is the huge benefit of like the real time stuff. And that's on everything we touch. And then on the other side, the post-call stuff, you're getting like call summaries, you're getting analytics. You're getting analytics that like you can't just track by like number of calls or missed calls or how long were they on hold. You're also getting like, what did they talk about? What were they happy about? What were they sad about? Like, because we also do sentiment analysis. Like you can also do cool things with real time where, you know, the manager gets alerted when a call is going poorly, right? So you don't even have to have the agent be like, please help me. They already see that like something's going wrong. We're detecting like they're upset. And then eventually the plan is we'll be able to tell the supervisor what's wrong with their product before the agents can even escalate it. Right. And that's obviously a ton of value just right there.
Yeah, like real time, the interesting thing, real time feedback, especially when you're talking about, it resonates with me customer services because I've, you know, back in the day it was technical support before. I've been an escalation engineer. I've worked in the sales. So I understand that having those skills is challenging. And so having the real-time kind of augmentation there is really, really good, going to be helpful. The question is, how far can you go with this? Can you, you know, you were obviously, you're saying, hey, you know, real-time, we are analyzing somebody who's calling into the system, you know, and we're doing things with their voice in a way where we're producing insights for the person who's listening and then giving them more value. You know, is there any challenges there when it comes to like, you know, whether you're allowed to do that or whether you're, you know, compliance things, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have to follow the compliances. Like we're in, you know, over 70 countries right now with service. You know, so we do adhere to all those compliance things and we're following the guidelines on those. Most of those are to deal with, you can do all this as long as the customer's okay with it. So if you can do this, if the company wants to turn it on, so like everything's customizable, right? You can turn it off. If you have a call center in a certain country and maybe the laws there don't allow it, you're able to configure that. You can turn it off for that. If there's definitely cases in some calls where you know, we have obviously regular call recording too. You have to let them know that you're recording it, right? In some even states, you don't have to do that. It's up to the customer to kind of decide that. And usually we're in compliance. We are in compliance by allowing them to control it. It's kind of like, you know, a lot of it about like GDPR and stuff like that is just giving the user control, let them configure it. And then they're usually really happy. So we just let them decide. We let them see how it works. We make sure that we protect their data, just like we protect all of their data, not just, you know, their voice data. Cause obviously they're still using us for text messaging, right? You know, as almost anyone's using any, you know, cloud SaaS product, they're going to have data, right? From their like sensitive data. So like that data is just as sensitive to us. It even just happens to be voice now, just like your email is super sensitive, right? So is your voice. And like, we always talk like, that's kind of the funny thing about data and businesses that that's missing. Like voice is what we call like the last offline data set. It's the one thing that actually businesses don't have access to. And like that could be super useful data, just like anything else in their business.
Right. Well, we have lots more to talk about here, so definitely stick around. But before we get to all of that, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech. And that's Akamai. Now, when you're in software and services like I am, you think scale and you always think Akamai. Now, I've been using Akamai for years, especially utilizing their unparalleled CDN support, especially for large piles that require low latency. Now, we've talked a lot about microservices on the show. Imagine not having to think about scale for those services. Now, edge computing brings your software and services as close proximity to your end user as possible. And that's where Akamai is the platform and a platinum standard for it. Now, Akamai is the world's largest distributed edge compute platform. Now, ask yourself, would you like to deliver extraordinary customer experience and run code at the edge? Well, Akamai is your answer, and it's truly, truly powerful because Akamai has 10 times the locations of the nearest competitor. That's over 4,000 locations. You are always closer to your end user with Akamai, significantly cutting down on latency. Now, Akamai will also greatly improve customer experience as well. Your customers will get the content, app, sites, and video they need without lag, interruption, and latency during the unexpected traffic spikes that are out there. Now, prepare for spikes in demand and optimize resources to provide the best experience for your customers. You'll be amazed at Akamai's unparalleled performance, and you'll always be one network hop away from 85% of the world's internet users. Now, what about scalability? Well, application architects get the flexibility to scale their applications and their enterprise applications with Akamai EdgeWorkers. Now, with EdgeWorkers, your development teams can focus on building while letting Akamai take care of the challenges of scaling it globally. Now, because Akamai empowers you to deploy serverless code at the edge, you won't experience the headaches of increased traffic at origin or the overheads that go along with it. Now, Akamai gives you the power to innovate right at the edge because your logic and functions are deployed and active at the nearest proximity to your end users. You're getting the fastest end user experience around the globe. Now, Akamai makes it simple to build right at the edge using JavaScript so you can innovate in real time. You get low latency access to data for custom code at the edge. Now, Akamai can optimize your API traffic delivery for edge applications, but what's the cost? Now, even with its unrivaled intelligence, performance, and scalability, Akamai is comparatively priced because limits are set per request. You can be sure your workload will scale no matter the size of your user base. And being serverless means you see decrease overhead at the origin too. Now, you know Akamai and their reputation. They're trusted by the biggest brands in the world, and you're getting 10 times the locations of competitors for the fastest customer experience available. So check out Akamai's website to learn more about edge computing. Even have a conversation with them. You might be surprised by just how competitive the pricing is. Build closer to your end user with Akamai, the world's largest distributed edge compute platform. Visit akamai.com/enterprise today to learn more. That's akamai.com/enterprise. And we thank Akamai for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking with Brian Peterson, CTO of Dialpad, about some of the latest, greatest inventions and things going on in the communications platform side of things, especially AI. But I do want to bring my co-host back in. They have some questions they want to go for. Gbert, let's start with you.
Well, back in the day, IVRs were cumbersome. You know, building the decision tree on, you know, press one for this or two for this and so forth. There's got to be a better way. And I'm thinking chatbots are now getting more toward it. I equate it to like the change from the old hierarchical databases over to SQL. You know, does object-oriented IVRs exist yet? And how do you build your IVRs?
Yeah. So, I mean, our goal is to have everything just as easy as if you were to set up any other web setting you would have for any of your personal apps or your business apps. Like that was our mission, right? Like this should just be as easy as any other modern app you use, right? So like you log in, you have obviously probably a much better design than the system have in like actual, you know, tooltips and help, but we can go directly into the site. You can say create a new call center, create a new branch, set up all your menu items, set up the settings all from the interface of, you know, whether you want to do skills-based routing or who do you want to call, who do you not want to call, which options do you want to present to them. And it's all just in like a simple, you know, web interface with a design like you configure, you know, anything you would on like an iPhone app. And it's all, and then what you can do is you can instantly test it. So you can go and try it out and see if it works and then tweak it, and you don't have to go back to some complicated system, and it just changes instantly. So it should be as easy as anything else you'd use. Well, and then for the automation part, like that's the eventual thing, right? Is that what we're working towards with our AI too, is that there's going to be things where like people ask questions, you want to give them answers, you want to direct them to the right thing. Like that's the important thing, is things can't just be keyword matched anymore. Like I want to talk to sales or support. It's going to have to be like, you know, sent like attached to actual, you know, sentiment, like which thing are you trying to get to, map them to the right place, and then make sure they have all the tools just to configure it and make sure it doesn't require, you know, some really, you know, advanced IT degree to make the change.
Well, speaking of IT degrees, how do we deal with, we've got legacy apps all over the place. What kind of toolkits, what kind of programming environments do you folks support for us to go and bring the legacy apps into the modern world?
Yeah. So one thing we do that helps a lot, and it's worked with us when we've gone to bigger companies, is you can actually configure us with your existing system. If you can't move everything at once, like if you have some old, on-premise phone system and you still want to move some stuff to the cloud, you can definitely do that and they can interact with each other. But like everyone's goal is to get to that modern piece. So at that point, they want to make sure that they can do the same things they could do with their old system, which had thousands of features, although really hard to figure out what those were, but it was thousands of features. You might want some of them. You want to make sure that they can easily, you know, get what they need solved. So like, of course, we offer, you know, part of this platform, this true CAS platform, we're calling, which is true unified communications as a service, to sort of rethink the branding on unified communications, is you should be able to configure it. You should be able to say what you want to do, when you want to do it. So we expose, you know, typical like REST APIs that everyone's used to configure things. We do real-time events. So like you can have hooks into every single call from any system you want over HTTPS to be able to, you know, route calls a certain direction based on your own CRM data or, you know, route it to a specific tree of your IVR and like, you know, configure all the ways you embed it. You know, our app works basically in all forms, like different apps and through the web browser and CTIs and Salesforce and other CRMs. And so, yeah.
Well, you know, I was interested in the things that you were saying about AI, and especially the way that it can help guide a customer interaction and reduce the frustration, reduce the friction of that whole encounter. I know that your products are also aimed at collaboration among team members. So can you see a point, or are you already working with using AI to help enhance the productivity of teams in the same way that you enhance the effectiveness of customer communications?
Yeah. I mean, that's the nice thing about the way it's designed, right? Is that, so like our internal meetings are on dial pad meetings. So all of that same stuff, whether it's with an external customer or an internal customer, is running through the same AI, the same, you know, it's doing call summaries. It's telling you what questions were brought up, right? We even have something called like purpose of a call to detect what was the call about in summary fashion, because no one has time to listen to like back to 30 minute length call to find out what was, you know, talked about. So we're already doing some of that with the AI. And then like the other part we want to take it to is like, that's the nice thing about it, is that not just in video conferencing, but in everything, we use Dialpad for internal and external. A lot of our stuff, like we just released channel functionality, you know, somewhat, you know, similar to Slack. We had some of it internally, but we just launched it. That all is running through the same thing. So the same way you interact with your customers should be the same benefits that you get with interacting with your team internally. So we make sure that every single thing hooked up is running through the same stuff. So you can get the same analytics, you can get the same feedback. You can ask a question in a public channel internally, and you don't have to wait for someone to tell you the answer. It automatically responds, like its own version of deflection, which is so big in our industry, is to save that, like, don't have to go to the customer or the agent as fast as possible, return the answer to the customer faster, which makes them happier. Your customers also, your employees. So that's our goal too.
Well, first, I want to congratulate you on talking about using your own technology without ever once uttering the phrase dog fooding. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
But we did, and I will tell you, at the moment, I am monitoring four different chat media among our different things while we're talking. So I understand the value of having one very powerful communication source. But one of our listeners right now has asked if you could give, you know, maybe a concrete example of a problem that's been solved. You've done a really good job of explaining what can be done and given some sort of broad examples, but people would love to hear a concrete example. And then, of course, someone on this concrete example asking how secure your communications are. That's a huge issue all over the industry right now, and we'd love to hear how you're solving it.
Yeah, it's a difficult problem. Not saying the word dog food, I guess. and I came from Google, so we use dog food a lot. But I mean, just our journey was difficult, a difficult problem for our company. Well, kind of what I said before, like doing a web service with a database behind it, which is a majority of all cloud products out there for the most part, I would say, doing real-time communications around the world, because it's not something you can just, you know, go take a quick course on and build it. You have to iterate and iterate and iterate, because you are dealing with live calls hitting thousands and thousands of devices in real time across the world as like day one. Like that can't be your second year thing. You have to have international business phone service, for example, day one. It has to work, else you're gonna get be stopped before you start. And then on the security side, I mean, we have our own security team. We are in large enterprises. We've been doing this a long time. We learned a lot from Google. We're following every single best practice that we can find. We have, again, like we do pen testing. We obviously have to do compliance. So a lot of that has to do with compliance, like GDPR. We encrypt everything we possibly can. Things are encrypted at rest. Things are updated to the latest technology so we don't have the issue of, you know, running a lot of different versions of virtual machines all over the place that might be out of date. I know, you know, like some of that just happened with like Confluence, right? And part of that was because people are copying software and moving it around, right? So it's harder when you do that. If you're using the same stuff, like we're using the same technology and platform for our 5-person companies and up to our 10,000-person companies that keeps us actually on top of it with all the monitoring too and keeping on top of all the security aspects.
Fantastic. Well, folks, all good things must come to end. Brian, thank you so much for being here. We're running a little bit low on time, but I did want to give you a chance to tell the folks at home where they can learn more about Dialpad and maybe how they or their organization get started.
Yeah, just go to dialpad.com. You can actually sign up from there. That's one of the cool things too. Just sign up.
Fantastic. Thanks again, Brian. Well, folks, you've done it again. You sit there another hour of the best dang enterprise podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. I do want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my co-host, starting with our very own Mr. Brian Chi. Chibert, what's going on for you in the coming weeks and where can people find you?
Hey, I want to do a shout out to Retcon 5 on Discord. That animated GIF of the dog-shaped vacuum eating the dog food was hilarious. Anyway, on Twitter, I'm ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab, and we'd love to hear your suggestions, comments, and so forth. And yes, if you're listening to us and English is not your primary language, you're welcome to send it to me in whatever language you don't just try and tell me what it is in case it's hard to tell. And I'll run it through either Google or Microsoft Translate and we'll see if I can answer your question. I've done it in Japanese. I've done it in German. I've done it in French. So because it's a mechanical translation, have patience. Sometimes it'll make mistakes. But anyway, I'm also Chibert, spelled Cheebert at twit.tv, or you're also welcome to throw an email at twit@twit.tv. Now, I should do a real quick update. If you're going to be throwing show ideas, don't throw it at poor Lou's LinkedIn. Throw it at the Chibert@twit.tv and we can do something about it. Sadly, some of your great show ideas kind of get lost in the shuffle. Stop sending emails to Brian_Chi@infoworld.com. They're a little perturbed about that. So send it to Chibert@twit.tv or Twyatt@twit.tv or throw it at my Twitter address. We'd love to hear from you. You've sent some great show ideas. And yes, I'm sorry for the PR people that are watching. We have become more than a little popular and I'm a booking madman. And so some of your waits are going to be a little on the long side, but there's always the waiting list. Anyway, love to hear from you. Love to get show ideas. Love to hear your pitches. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thanks, Sheba. Definitely people are getting crafty. I tell you, the LinkedIn channel, it's unfortunate because I get a lot of hits on LinkedIn and it'll get lost in there. So definitely hit us up at twyatt@twit.tv. Well, folks, we also have to thank our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. What's going on for you, Curtis, in the coming weeks? And where can people find you and all your amazing work?
Well, I'm working on getting ready for the conference at IWCE later this month. I'm also going to be present at a number of vendor conferences. As for my writing, you're going to be able to find it on LinkedIn and at the Omdia website. You can follow me on Twitter at KG4GWA. And let me also say that just today, we began the Omdia Cybersecurity channel on YouTube. I've already got one piece up there. So feel free to check me out there, Omdia Cybersecurity on YouTube.
Thank you, Curtis. Well, folks, we have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to watch and listen to our show to get your enterprise goodness. We want to make it easy for you to watch and listen and get your enterprise news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twyatt. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes, show notes, co-host information, guest information, and links to the stories during the show. But more importantly, next to those videos, you'll get those helpful download and subscribe link. Support the show by getting your audio version, video version of your choice and listen on any one of your devices because we're on all of them. Tell you one thing, all those podcatcher applications. So definitely check us out and subscribe, support the show. Plus, you may have heard, that's right, Club Twit. It's the members only ad free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus fee that you can't get anywhere else. And it's only $7 per month. Now, one of my favorite things that come along with Club Twit is the exclusive access to the members only Discord channel. I have some great characters in there. They've definitely been able to figure out the art of animated GIFs on there. So definitely check it out. It's a lot of fun and some really interesting conversations happening there. So definitely join the movement at twit.tv/clubtwit. Now, Club Twit now offers corporate group plans as well. That's right. It's a great way to give your team access to our ad-free tech podcast. The plans start with 5 members at a discounted rate of $6 each per month, and you can add as many seats as you like there. This is really a great way to stay on top of your IT department, for your IT department and your developers and your tech teams to stay on top of their, you know, all the different podcasts we have here on Twit. And just like regular memberships, they also have access to that fantastic Twit Discord server and get the Twit Plus bonus feed as well. So definitely sign up for that, twit.tv/clubtwit. Now, after you subscribe, impress your friends, your family members, your coworkers with a gift of Twit, because we have a lot of fun tech topics on the show. I definitely guarantee they will enjoy it as well. So definitely share it with them and have them subscribe. Now, if you're already subscribed and you want to listen to us live, that's right. We do the show live every Friday, 1:30 p.m. Pacific time on Fridays here. We do the show at live.twit.tv. So definitely check that out. Come see the pizzas main. Come see the behind the scenes. Definitely check out all the banter we do here on Twit. Plus, if you're going to watch the show live, you might as well jump into our IRC channel as well. We have a great IRC channel at irc.twit.tv. See, we have a lot of great characters in there. They bring some fantastic, fantastic subjects to the show, some great topics and questions. So definitely join all those characters there and be part of our live chat room as well. You definitely should follow me at twitter.com/LouMM. There you can hit me up for show ideas, direct message me. We can chat about enterprise software, services, development, whatever you want to talk about. Love having great conversations with people like you. Plus, we can even talk about what I do during my normal work week at Microsoft. If you're more interested in that, you can go to developers.microsoft.com/office. There you find all the latest and greatest ways to customize your Office suite to make it more productive for you. And definitely check out Office Scripts, because it's the latest and greatest ways to actually generate macros in JavaScript. That's right, JavaScript and TypeScript, and you can customize them to run on the cloud. So definitely try that out and check it out. I do want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we couldn't do the show without them. So thank you to all their support over the years, and we really appreciate it. I also want to thank all the staff members and engineers at Twit. They make it happen for us. And of course, I also want to thank Mr. Brian Chee one more time. He told us before, he's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer, and he does all the bookings and the plannings for the show, and we really couldn't do the show without him. So thanks, Cheeber, for all your support. Now, before we sign out, we have to thank our editor. He's the magic behind the scenes that makes us look good after the fact, Mr. Victor. Thank you, sir, for all your support. And of course, we also have to thank our TD for today, the talented Mr. Ampruitt. He does a fabulous show, hands-on photography. We really love that. In fact, we learn things each and every week from him. And how's it going for you? And what's coming up on hands-on photography?
Mr. Lou, whoo, brother, I was so fired up. Good grief. I got to talk to Miss Loretta Houston. She's one of the newest Canon Explorers of Light. And she's also known for being the first female, black female photographer for Sports Illustrated Swimsuit. Whew. Yeah, go listen to that, man. It's going to fire you up. She was so inspirational.
Love it, love it. Thanks, Ant. Really great stuff there. Definitely listen to hands-on photography. And until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
If you find yourself talking to those virtual assistants in your house quite often, or maybe you can make your light turn on and off with the touch of a button, well, Smart Tech Today is the show for you. Join Matthew Casanelli and myself, Micah Sargent, every week as we talk all about smart stuff and the fun that comes along with it.